The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. Hello, this is Cass Sheeran for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting the latest legal matters. Today's legal matters is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind and those with low vision or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. For the past 4 months, you've been hearing about some of the work Disability Rights North Carolina does to protect the legal, civil, and human rights of North Carolina's people with disabilities. You've heard about our work to protect the rights of disabled people who receive Social Security benefits to ensure they're not abused, neglected, or exploited. Our lawsuit on behalf of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities to ensure they can get the services they need to live and thrive in the communities of their choice. Work we do to promote the rights and safety of incarcerated people. And our focus on kids who are locked in psychiatric institutions because of the state's failure to provide services that would allow them to live, heal, and thrive in their communities. We're going to continue to bring you episodes that focus on specific areas of our work, such as disaster preparedness, get ready, hurricane season is coming, our public policy work, and more. Today's episode is going to be a little different. I'm thrilled to have with me today Disability Rights NC's Chief Executive Officer, Virginia Knowlton Marcus, to talk about the overall role DRNC plays in the state of North Carolina and how we fit in with a national network of agencies like DRNC. DRNC is an independent 501c3 nonprofit organization and a member of the National Disability Rights Network. We are called the Protection and Advocacy Agency for North Carolina, the PNA. More on that with Virginia in a moment. As I mentioned, I'm Cass Sheeran, and I am on DRNC's communications team. I've been with the agency for 15 years in various positions and absolutely love what this committed, passionate team of people accomplish on behalf of people with disabilities, always with the needs and desires of disabled people centering our work. We do a wide variety of work on behalf of the nearly 3 million disabled people in North Carolina. You can learn a lot about the work we do on our website, disabilityrightsnc.org. Right now, a big feature on our website is registration for our annual conference, this year called Stronger Together in North Carolina. The 7th Annual Disability Advocacy Conference is a one-day event on Tuesday, May the 2nd, at the McKimmon Center in Raleigh. We'll bring together people with disabilities, family members, policymakers, and other professionals in the field to share, learn, motivate, and create opportunities for change. We hope you'll join us, and please spread the word. And when you visit our website, please let us know if you experience any accessibility issues. We've worked hard to address this, and we want to know. This is a priority. So please let us know. We are constantly working to improve. Now for today's show. Virginia Knowlton Marcus has been with DRNC for 4 years, and in that short time, she has created new energy and boosted our work and the size of our team, expanding our capacity in new and innovative ways. A lawyer, Virginia was recently recognized as one of North Carolina's leaders in the law, among many, many accolades she has been given throughout her career. Virginia came to us after serving in leadership positions at the PNAs in California and Maryland. She currently serves on the board of the National Disability Rights Network in a leadership position there as well. I could go on and on about Virginia, but you need to hear from her. Welcome, Virginia.
Hello, Cass. Thank you for having me here.
I'm not at all nervous talking with the CEO of our agency. No, Virginia's wonderful. Can you tell us a little bit? I'd like to think of this program as sort of DRNC 101 and help people understand what a PNA is and what a PNA can do and how did we come to exist?
Great questions. Well, as Cass said, we are the Protection and Advocacy Organization in North Carolina, or PNA for short. And part of a national network. So there are 57 PNAs, one in every state and territory. We were created in response to the inhumane, discriminatory conditions in the large congregate institutions where people with disabilities were routinely warehoused. So back in the 70s, a child may be born with a disability and the doctor would advise the parents to put the child into an institution, and that would be the best place for the child. So that child might grow up in an institution and then graduate to an adult facility and really live in a segregated setting their entire life. The conditions in some of these facilities were abysmal, inhumane, filthy. And so when that came to light, and there's a story about this, it was actually Geraldo Rivera who broke the story. There was a doctor inside Willowbrook Institution in New York who basically gave him the keys, and he did an unannounced visit, brought a camera people in there with him. And so that really exposed how horrible the conditions were in these large facilities. And this is a model, a discriminatory, antiquated model that we're still trying to live down today. We're still trying to make that shift away from the institutional mentality and build the awareness and enforce the right of people to live included in their communities. Mm-hmm. And so Congress was motivated to do something about this. So they created us. They created the protection and advocacies. And in creating us, they created a legal advocacy network. And it's similar to legal aid, but it's different. So where legal aid provides a lot of individual assistance to people with legal matters related to their poverty, Disability Rights North Carolina and the other protection and advocacy organizations do more work on a systemic level. Mm-hmm. So what we're really trying to do is change systems and policies that will impact a large number of people with disabilities. We have very limited funding, and the funding that we have is typically dedicated to a specific type of legal issue or to a specific type of disability. For example, our largest federal grant allows us to serve people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Mm-hmm. We have the grant that you talked about to do the rep payee investigations in a previous show. We have our PAMI program that allows us to serve people with mental health disabilities. And the PAIR grant, that would be our fourth largest grant, is Protection and Advocacy for Individual Rights. That grant is smaller than the grants that allow us to serve people with severe and persistent mental illness and intellectual and developmental disabilities. And it's a large group of disabled people, basically everyone else. Everyone else who falls under that broad ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, definition of disability and is not eligible to be served as a person with intellectual and developmental disabilities or severe and persistent mental illness, we serve with our PAIR grant. So we have to do a lot with a little, and we do that by working on the systems level. We do some individual advocacy. Typically, it's because it's a severe issue that only we can help with, or it's a situation where if we get a good result for that individual person, all the other people who are in a similar circumstance will benefit from that result.
I want to stop you right there and talk about an example in that area that I think the listeners may be very interested in, okay. And that was the Oliva case out of Winston-Salem. And that's an example of an individual who called us for legal services assistance. And I'll let you talk about the case itself, but that the result from that call is going to help all people with vision issues or who have service animals, all people with service animals in the Winston-Salem area. So can you talk a little bit about that case?
Sure, I would love to. So our client in that matter simply wanted to go shopping in a store in Winston-Salem.
And it's on Black Friday, I think.
Right? Yes.
Yeah. So it's packed
yes.
in the mall.
Yes, wanted to take advantage of the sales on Black Friday like everybody else, and happens to use a service animal. And so he was, previously he had been ejected from that store because of his animal. And they said, we don't allow dogs. Like, but it's a service animal. And so this time when he went back, he was ready. He had information about his rights as a blind person to be in a place of public accommodation with his service animal. So the owner, seeing the service animal in the store, called Mall Security and Winston-Salem Police. Mall Security got there first. They took a look at the information that Mr. Oliva provided to them, and they said, he's right. He has a right to be in this store. When the police came, though, they said that his rights essentially didn't matter because what was paramount was the owner's desire not to have an animal in the store. They told him he could leave voluntarily or they would take him downtown in a squad car. So he
charged him with trespassing, right?
Charged him with trespassing, yes. So so he found his way to us, and we always try to solve the case as close to the ground as possible. We don't rush to the courthouse. And so we tried to resolve the matter more informally. But when we contacted the city and the police department, they doubled down. And they said, yes, that is our policy. So we sort of had no choice but to file a lawsuit in order to get this corrected. But as a result, the city and its police department are now aware of the law and are abiding by it. They have adopted a policy that they will use to train their police officers so that they are all aware of the legal rights of blind people to have a service animal accompany them in a place of public accommodation. So usually when we get a victory like this, it's not the end, it's just the beginning, because then we have to make sure that we get the result that we are entitled to. And in this case, what we really would like to do, and we would love to have the community's support, is we would love to see a policy like this adopted in every city in North Carolina.
Right.
So maybe asking a question about, do we have a policy like that in our city, might be a good way to do some self-advocacy and take affirmative steps before the discrimination occurs.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I think the city of Winston-Salem said. They believe that their policy was the first of its kind for cities its size, for the largest cities in North Carolina. But there are so many municipalities and counties in North Carolina. So, yeah, so thank you for that. It would be great if people could get involved in asking those kinds of questions and
yes,
letting us know. So what excites you about the work of the P&A? What makes you get up every morning and go, yahoo?
Well, the people we work for and the people I work with is one thing, but, you know, it's just so important to have an organization like the P&A that is independent and that is client-directed, meaning that people with disabilities call their own shots within the P&A. We are advocating for their aspirations, their legal rights, the changes and improvements that they want to see in their life. So, in, you know, being able to do that systemically with the tools that we have available to us, I think is just so important. And people sometimes forget, you know, there is a lot of representation for other actors within the constellation of the disability community. There's really not a lot of resources dedicated to making sure that people with disabilities themselves are represented, have their rights enforced, are at the table where decisions are being made. And we come directly out of the civil rights movement at Judy Heumann, who we recently lost, and others, started with their own voices, with their refusal to settle for the expectations that other people put on them. We are a direct result of all of that work.
Mm-hmm. And when Congress created the P&A system, they gave the P&A some what people call unique authorities. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, that's another way that we are different than some of our other allies in the legal services safety net, in that we are empowered under federal law to monitor places where people with disabilities receive care, treatment, or services. And that refers to a broad range of settings, from prisons to schools, to psychiatric hospitals and many places, day programs, et cetera. And so we monitor on a regular basis to make sure that people with disabilities are not being abused, neglected, and exploited. Sometimes there is a suspicious incident, even death, that is reported to us or that we find out about. When we have probable cause to believe that abuse and neglect occurred or is occurring, we can do an investigation. We can talk to residents. We can talk to staff. We can access records. And when we do that, we're not going in to do gotcha or sue for money damages. What we are trying to do is find out what happened to make sure that we can get the systemic reform in place so that it doesn't happen again, so that people are not continuing to be harmed. So that is so important, our access authority, and we use it wisely. We're very circumspect about it, and it's a tool that we safeguard and that we need, because there is so much abuse and neglect of people with disabilities who are vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. And those investigations really are transforming in terms of the people who the results, the outcomes of those investigations, like you said, can produce systemic outcomes that help other people in the facility, people who may come in the future, to have their rights protected and to be safe and put protections in place. So I participated in some of those investigations, yes. And so it's been such an important feature of the PNA, and I'm so glad that we have that authority. And also we partner with other agencies who are in these facilities as well through the years, like the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program and things like that. And so partnerships are a strong component of the work of Disability Rights North Carolina. And I want you to talk a little bit about our governance board, and the partnerships we have with all of our board of directors and the PAMEAC and other partnerships that you're excited about.
Okay. Oh, partnerships. Well, we could talk all day about this. I mean, we are very collaborative. We do a lot of our work in partnership and in coalition, and we always attempt to do that. I mean, even when we're investigating facilities and finding that there are issues that need to be addressed, we try to partner with the agency that is charged with, for example, licensing and regulating such facilities. We always try to solve matters on the ground as much as possible. For example, our monitoring of the PRTFs, filing complaints, raising issues, not really getting the change we wanted to see, partnering with the media that brought attention to this issue, the Gannett series that ran. Eventually we had a USA Today cover story talking about the situation of children being warehoused in these PRTFs that are not therapeutic and that are re-traumatizing them.
Abusing and neglecting them,
and then still not getting the change that we need, and from there having to file the lawsuit, Timothy B., that I think you've talked about already. So partnerships. Well, we partner with our board, and our board of directors is led by Ed Rizzuto. He is a blind attorney from California, so we're both attorneys from California.
He lives here now, though, in North Carolina.
He lives in Durham. Yeah. Yep, he lives in Durham. And so he has been an excellent mentor and guide to me and the other board members. We also have, as you mentioned, a PAMI Advisory Council, Protection and Advocacy for Individuals with Mental Illness. So these are people who are ambassadors for the mental health community. So they are bringing information to us from the community and from us to the community, so that our work on behalf of people with mental health disabilities is informed by the North Carolina community. We also have so many partners. I mean, you mentioned the annual conference, right? Mm-hmm. We have so many partners that are going to be part of the annual conference. I'm really excited about that. In fact, we named it Stronger Together NC because really we have a specialized role. We are legal advocates, and so we can add that value to the disability movement. But certainly we're just one piece of it. Mm-hmm. We partner with people with disabilities. In fact, that's how we develop our scope of work, which is called our advocacy targets.
You're way ahead of me. That's awesome. Thank you. That's great. Thank you.
But so you, if you follow us, you will find that we put out a call every year for input into the work that we're doing. What are the most important issues, legal issues related to disability that an organization of legal advocates can be working on? And from that input, then we develop our targets or our scope of work, which is a public document that lives on our website and tells the world what it is that we're working on, and I suppose by omission, you know, what we're not. And so everything that we do really from the ground up is in partnership with others. We have a specialized role and an important role, but we are stronger together.
And before the pandemic hit, we were about to begin sort of get on the road and talk with people in the communities, in various communities around the state to gather their thoughts about helping to narrow the scope of our work in ways that they want to see it. Can you talk a little bit about what that might look like when we're able to do that?
Yes, we definitely want to get back out in the community. We are in the community more. We're doing our outreach events. I think you'll do a segment on what the outreach team is doing. And we're out monitoring facilities in person, again, doing the rep pay reviews. And so starting to stick our toes in the water with the annual conference. We'll take plenty of precautions, but we are doing that. But the pandemic really shut down just a lot of great things that we had in motion. One was the Our Voices Tour, a statewide tour where we were going out to marginalized groups in the disability community that aren't often heard from. We did one. We talked to formerly incarcerated people with disabilities in the Mecklenburg County area, and then the pandemic shut us down. We also had our annual conference ready to go, and Judy Heumann was going to be the plenary speaker. And it breaks my heart that we never had the chance to introduce this incredible woman and activist to the North Carolina community, because she would have done what she does everywhere. She would have come down here, made friends, you know, mentored people, inspired people. And so I'm so sorry that we were not able to welcome Judy.
For people who might want to learn a little bit more about Judy, can you spell Judy's last name? Because we might think it's H-U-M-A-N, like human.
Yes.
But it's not.
No, which is a play on words. And I highly recommend her book, Being Human. But it's spelled H-E-U-M-A-N-N.
She was a force.
Yes, and if you haven't seen the movie Crypt Camp, why? Why haven't you seen it? Watch Crypt Camp.
I think it's on Netflix, right?
Yes, yes. And another great movie I can recommend is called Lives Worth Living. Mm-hmm. I feel like the disability civil rights movement is the greatest story never told. Our history is fascinating. I really would encourage everyone who has any stake in disability at all to learn our history, because it's so important. We're at a turning point right now, I feel. I feel a lot of resistance to the disability movement, and we have a great generation of new leaders that excites me. They are not messing around. They are post-ADA generation, and they're not going back. So it's exciting to see that there is new leadership coming up in the movement. But I feel some headwinds now that I haven't felt in past years. So I think this is a really critical moment for us to get clear about where we've come from and where we're going.
And build our communities.
And build our communities.
Build our communities. Through partnerships.
Through partnerships. And by the way, there is a wave of aging baby boomers that are not going to want to go en masse to facilities. They're going to want to have accessible built environments so that they can age in place. And we are behind the curve on that. We need to get with universal design. We need to make the shift from sending so much money into costly, outdated models.
Right. Where people lose their autonomy.
Right.
Among many things.
Among many things.
Among many things.
And their independent living skills.
Correct. Yeah, there's a lot to be said about if you don't use it, you lose it.
Right.
Real quickly, I want to talk about the outreach we're doing around vaccinations.
Yes.
We have a couple minutes left.
So. Okay, great. Okay, so we can talk a little bit about what the outreach team is getting into. So we received funding from U.S. Aging, which is the umbrella organization over the area agencies on aging, known as the triple A's, to assist them in their efforts to make sure that people with disabilities and older adults, including people with age-related disabilities, have equal access to vaccines. So we had a project similar to that that was very successful, and so they have brought us in for a partnership to make sure that there's equitable access to life-saving vaccines, both COVID and influenza this time around. Mm-hmm. And so we are taking our show on the road again, focusing on the most marginalized communities, low-wealth communities, communities of color, rural communities, and we're looking for partners to administer these vaccines. We are not coming in to administer vaccines. We are there to connect community-based organizations at these events, maybe supply some goodie bags and some food and some fun, but really trying to bring communities together to ensure that there's equal access. And for those people who can't attend an event, maybe they're not able to leave their homes because of their disability, make sure that the vaccine gets to them regardless of their ability to travel.
So if people are listening and they're interested in having an event like this in their community, they could call us.
Absolutely.
At 919-856-2195.
That's 919-856-2195. Or visit our website,
disabilityrightsnc.org. So you have, I hope you've enjoyed today's episode of Legal Matters. Again, I'm Cass Sheeran, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. If you have any comments or questions, please call the North Carolina Reading Service at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.